bully, bully, watch it now, watch it, here you go.
806 Hudson Valley Focus Live on the Beacon. Back in studio with me, Stephen James Petruccio, author, artist, illustrator. Did I say that right?
That about covers it, yes.
That about covers it. Good morning, Stephen, and I really appreciate not only you being here, but the support that you've given me over the years. You and I have communicated when we first met remotely a few years ago when I had been up at the Rhine Cliff and talking about the ice boats, and you had contacted me then about some of the, you know, the art that you had done centered around the ice boating on the Hudson River.
Yeah, the boats had been out at Tivoli, and I ran back home, grabbed a sketchbook, watercolors, and started painting them. And when you mentioned them, I said, I have these paintings.
Yeah.
So I sent them to you.
You know, I actually forgot you have one of your paintings that you brought with you to, really, to Olana. I forgot. I was thinking about bringing in. I have a picture from John Gould of ice boat racing the Empire State Express.
Yeah, yeah. He's a very meticulous, historically accurate painter. Yeah.
Yep, and it's just somehow, and I'm gonna see if somebody can maybe restore it for me. I don't know what happened, if moisture got into it or something. There's one little blemish.
Yeah, it could be.
On
it happens.
And,
yeah,
and it's you know, it's a reproduction. It's like one of 300 or whatever the heck the number is. But I love it.
And that's the only thing that matters with art.
Yeah,
if you love it, you know, you put it in your house. That's it. Doesn't have to. They say it doesn't have to match your sofa.
Yep. So I was thinking about, you know, what am I going to do with this? Well, my daughter and son-in-law are building a house across the river, and the property actually goes right down to the river, and I'm going to see if they want it, because it would be something that you'd almost be looking out their front window.
Right.
And, you know, going back in the era that was done, you could have seen the ice boats, you know, going up the Hudson River with the train on the other side.
I think it'd be great. I mean, it just puts, you know, talk about history.
Yes.
It puts some historical context to where they are.
I had a couple more prints that were like the Hudson River sloops. And not last year, but I think it was the year before I donated them to the Mental Health Duchess for their auction that they had for their gala. And I figured, well, let it go to, you know, a good cause.
And now that you mentioned mental health.
Yes.
Today is the 10th anniversary of naming 103rd Street and Amsterdam Avenue Norman Rockwell Place.
Oh.
So everybody knows Norman Rockwell.
Yes.
If you talk about, you know, American art or illustration, right? Probably the most famous illustrator that comes to people's minds. We associate him with Stockbridge now, but he only moved to Stockbridge because of his wife's mental health. She needed to be there. She was being treated by a local doctor there. So that's why we associate him with Stockbridge.
Ah.
But he actually was born in New York City.
Yes.
103rd in Amsterdam. It now says Norman Rockwell Place. I was actually the only illustrator invited to be at the ceremony. And I'll put up a video later on today of that. And then he moved to New Rochelle. So he really has his roots here, you know, in the Hudson Valley. You know, when he started his career and became famous.
Yes.
And we just associate him with Stockbridge because, you know, for those reasons, he had to go there.
Yeah, exactly. The in studio with me, Stephen James Petruccio. How's the best way that people find you online?
It's a long one, StephenJamesPetruccio.com.
And that's S-T-E-V-E-N.
Right.
And S-T-E-V-E-N. And but yeah, the Hudson River School of Painting, you know, we're going to talk about the Frederick Church, and I did a little bit of work on this. Some of it to kind of refresh my memory. Preceding him was Thomas Cole.
Correct.
And then Church was a student or follower of Thomas Cole.
Right, yeah. Church was an artist, and he moved up the river.
Mm-hmm.
Had a studio down in New York City, but he moved up to Hudson and, you know, found a little house and built his studio there eventually, overlooking the river and directly across from his mentor, Thomas Cole.
Yes.
they say, you know, the people who were the tour guides at Olana, he built it just slightly higher than Thomas Cole's house. Just, you know.
It is absolutely a magnificent property in the sense of where it is situated, and it looks up and down the river, as well as then the architecture of the house that they built there.
It's incredible. And, you know, the reason I really contacted you is not to talk about my own personal work, but, you know, since it's America 250, the history of art, you know, in America began here in the Hudson Valley.
Yes.
This is it. This is where we have our first art movement, and it's Thomas Cole and it's Frederick Church, Jasper Cropsey, and all the famous Hudson River School style artists. Uh-huh. And before that, art was basically European. You know, if you wanted to know about art, you studied, you know, outside of this country.
Yes.
You didn't learn anything here. But subject matter-wise, you know, it was a lot of portraits and, you know, historical subject matter. But turning to the landscape, this group of artists, beginning with Cole, really showed the magnificence of the country. And people, you know, across the pond, as they say,
yes,
right? They couldn't believe it. They were like, no, they're making up those clouds, that sunset. Well, I mean, anybody who lives here, you know, how many times do you see on Instagram people are posting pictures of the magnificent sunsets?
Yes.
Well, these artists captured them with paint. And people could not believe that this existed. But our light is so special here.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, how could you not capture it? And
it's interesting that you're talking about in across the pond, because on Sunday, you know, it was 3 years ago we went to Germany and France. I've spoken about it often, and while we were there in France, we went to Monet's garden. And that has been one of my wife's favorite artists forever. And as she sat there, and what you just said about the clouds and the light,
right,
the day we were there, the clouds and the light were such that she actually started just crying, because it was so reminiscent of what Monet had captured in his paintings there at Giverny in the garden.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of why an artist paints.
Yes.
You know, I mean, people will paint for art as, you know, a hobby. It's great. I encourage people to do that. But people who make art their life and their career, there's more motivation than, oh, I want to capture, you know, that beautiful tree.
Yes.
What about the light around that tree? What about, you know, that, get capture that perfect time of day? The shadows aren't, the colors that you see under certain lighting conditions. You walk by and you feel something, oh, I have to paint that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason to do it, not because, oh, it's pretty. You know. And the decorative part of it is great. If you just want to paint something because you like the way it looks, go ahead and do it. You know, we were saying it doesn't need to match your sofa. It doesn't need to have any particular meaning to it. You don't have to get into the true meaning of the artwork. What is the artist trying to represent? I like it.
I like it.
It's enough, you know. And if you're a painter, this feels right to me. Just paint it.
When Harold, I was glad that you were able to meet Harold King and Johnny Ann Hansen here. They were, you know, you were already here when they left, and as I said, Harold's wife Amy was an art teacher, and as I said, his mom was a kindergarten teacher, but the fact that we have these different innate abilities, I mean, I just marvel at it when I look at my wife has a friend out in Colorado who is she draws you know the florals and botanicals. I think she actually belongs to the Botanical Artists Association or whatever.
There's a lot of associations.
Exactly. We had another friend, Emma, who passed away last year. Same thing, and how the brain can capture that and take it from the eye to the brain to the hand. I just marvel at it. You know?
Yeah, it's a special thing. Some call it a gift. Some call it a curse.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a skill, and a lot of people have it. But what do you do with it? That's the thing. You know, you have to realize, you know, what are the outlets for this talent? I also teach at Marist University. I've been teaching there over 35 years.
Yeah. Wow.
So now I'm teaching digital illustration.
Okay.
And getting students into, like, modern uses of their artwork.
Hold on to that thought, if you will, Stephen James Petruccio, author, artist, illustrator. Quick sports update, Robbie, and then back with more here on The Beacon.
I'm looking at myself, reflections of my mind. It's just the kind of day to leave myself behind.
821 Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon. Stephen James Petruccio, local author, artist, illustrator, and reasonably well known in the industry.
Yeah, I would say so for over 40 years. So,
and we were talking about the hospital that you did the mural in for the pediatric wing. It's now the Garnet Hospital over in Middletown. Absolutely beautiful. And before we come back to, let's talk about it for 1 second, because the research that had to go into that to meet the needs of the client was exacting.
Yeah, and it had to all be about the Hudson Valley.
Yes.
So the focus on the flora and fauna, every creature that's in it, every flower and tree that's in it, how the landscape looks was, you know, had to be definitively Hudson Valley. And then I had to identify everything. If I put a tree in, I had to let the art curator know what the species of tree it was.
Wow.
So a lot of research. And if you look at it, it just looks like a beautiful woodland scene.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't pick up on, you know, well, would this flower actually grow there? But, yes, it would. So whatever you see.
But very calming. I mean, we're talking about the pediatric wing in the hospital. You know, people are going to be there, you know, maybe under stressful conditions. But it's almost as if you are walking into nature.
Yeah, and as you walk along it, it is called a fabled forest, because as you walk along, there are fables that you can tell. So mm-hmm. on the left-hand side, it starts out with the fox and the crow. And if you're familiar with the story, you could just say, oh, wow, the fox and the crow, that's, you know, from this fable. And then as you walk along, there'll be the frogs and the heron. So careful what you wish for, kind of thing, because the heron comes and eats all the frogs. But as you as you go along, they wanted a king.
Yes.
So it's meticulous research, but all in all, you've just got to make it look like a whole, just natural thing. It's worth a look. And there's a website called the Fabled Forest Mural.
Okay.
And you can go on. We set it up for the hospital for fundraising purposes. But it's still up, and you can take a look at the mural there.
Exactly. Let's talk about Freedom's Howl, the Song of the Red Wolves.
Sure. Well, one of the reasons that, again, that I wanted to come on was not only talk about the significance of art in the Hudson Valley in America's 250, but the different things that different states are doing for it. And North Carolina Cultural Department contacted me. They knew of my experience with nature themes and historical themes. So they wanted me to handle part of this book. It's a combination of talents with authors and two illustrators, where one of the illustrators handled the natural science part of the story, where it tells about the endangered red wolf.
Mm-hmm.
So the only native species of wolf to the United States, which was nearly extinct. The government of North Carolina found a small pack, and they reintroduced them. They bred them. They came up with, you know, multiple packs or families of red wolves. So they wanted to tell that story in a historical way. And they tell it through the scientific, you know, story of how the wolves behave. And then for my portion of it, the interaction of the early colonists with the wolf. And it's the Few family, which is an actual family that, you know, settled in North Carolina.
Wow.
In fact, I think it's John Few Jr. became the president of Duke University eventually. But it's his family. He was his great grandfather would have been killed, or great great grandfather would have been killed in the, not in the Revolution, but before, in the Regulators of North Carolina, having a battle because they wanted to, you know, secede from the British rule. And they started fighting. And so the battle scene in the book, oh, that's all research too. The gunpowder, the muskets, you know, all that type of thing. There's scenes in a kitchen where the children come in and they tell their mother, we hear wolves outside. Well, so you see children running into a kitchen, but look at all the utensils that they're using, the things that are hung on the wall, the type of fireplace that's there. You know, all of those had to be researched, and you would not give it a second thought, you know, as a reader, but for someone who, you know, wants accuracy, as I do and as they did in North Carolina, everything is totally accurate to the period. So, yeah, a lot of research went into it. It's, you know, a true-ish kind of story because it was a family.
Yes.
It was just the mother and her two children and an uncle who appears in the story. And the story of the Red Wolf is ongoing. It's being reintroduced.
Well, that's what I'm at the, you know, well into the book here. How can you help save the Red Wolves?
Mm-hmm.
One of the lessons in here today.
Yes, very much so. And a pack or a family of Red Wolves was just introduced into New York State last year. So they are trying to, you know, reintroduce them to the environment. You know, think about, you know, population control of different animals. Mm-hmm. They're crucial in that. But we sort of did away with that aspect of it.
You know, I should get the folks in from the Wolf Sanctuary that it's in, I think it's Westchester County. I can't remember if it's Putnam or Westchester County, but there is a wolf sanctuary here.
That's interesting.
Very interesting. And we had also gone to one in Massachusetts. I'm trying to think where it was. I think it's safe to say that the wolf is a very misunderstood creature.
Yeah, you'd be right in that. And that's why in the story, you know, the children hear it and it's all of a sudden they're frightened by it. And the farmers are frightened. It's going to eat their livestock. Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's the mystery. In England and France, it was thought of as a mystical, evil creature. So when they would hear it here, they're like, well, we need to do away with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it didn't have a good reputation.
How's your schedule? We're closing at 8:30. You good with me until 9?
I'm fine,
We want to talk about Olana. We want to talk about Frederick Church, the 200th anniversary. You mentioned teaching at Marist University. I'm curious to know more about that and thoughts about how AI will affect the arts. And we have, you know, many different things that we can talk about here this morning. Stephen James Petruccio, who are your characters? I want to say Frog and Toad. Is that right?
Oh, no. The Hog and Frog?
Hog and Frog. Hog and Frog.
In addition to my illustration of books, I have a little side thing that I do, too, a little cartoon that I illustrate on Instagram.
Yes. And so sometimes I see Hog and Frog will be commenting on something out there.
Yes, they will. Yeah.
I tell you what, I want to come back to those other topics we talked about, but you, your wife, your son, very, very talented family all the way around. Is there a daughter also?
Yeah, my daughter as well.
Yeah. So, and when we've spoken before, your son, active in the automotive industry with the work that he does.
He's an automotive filmmaker.
Yes.
His work's been nominated for the Motor Film Awards a number of times. We'll be going out to, he will be filming a Lamborghini series of races on the 24th, weekend of the 24th in Watkins Glen. So we'll be going to see him work there. He lives in Texas.
Sure.
So he can fly out to any part of the country he needs to go to quickly. But yeah, that's kind of what he does, and he's really well known in the industry. Crispy, he's known as that, K-R-I-S-P-Y.
Okay.
Which comes from Chris Petruccio. He was on his baseball team with three Chris's.
Oh, okay.
Chris T, Chris W, Chris P.
Named Crispy.
There you go.
So,
and my daughter was a dancer, and now she's a physical trainer. And my wife was a graphic designer, so it just runs in the family, the talents, right? So you don't have to be a painter,
right?
You know, to be talented. So comes out in different ways.
And that's really the beauty of it, about recognizing, you know, the differences that we have with people's talents, abilities, and you know, backing all the way up to the education system to give people an opportunity to explore their innate abilities and to learn what they like and what they don't like.
Yeah, and we were even saying the talent is not only in the arts.
No.
I mean, if you can bring it right back around to political leadership.
Exactly.
You know, how many people do want to get involved, you know, or have the ability to get involved?
Or lack of. 8:30, Stephen James Petruccio, back with me on Hudsonville Focus Live on The Beacon. She's
Shakespeare find my 409, my 409, 409, giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, 409, giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, 409, giddy up, 409.
835, Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon. Stephen James Petruccio, author, illustrator, in studio with me. Let's see, where are we taking this conversation? Did we cover enough of the Freedom's Howl, the Song of the Red Wolves? This is available on Amazon. It's available.
It's available everywhere. University of North Carolina Press is the publisher.
Okay.
So you can even go to their website and get it through there. But Freedom's Howl, Song of the Red Wolf, it'll bring you to the book.
And tell me about Gecko Girl.
So that's another project that I worked on last year, which is, you know, talk about what illustrators do. We can move from one historically accurate kind of subject matter over to a more whimsical kind of thing. It depends on what publishers want you to do with your work. You know, they like your style. They like your storytelling ability. So they'll ask you to handle different matters. So I'll read the manuscript, and if I like it, I will, you know, give a go. So Gecko Girl was appealing to me. The publisher is Arte Publico, which is the largest bilingual publisher in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
They published my last book, which was Boy Who Touched the Stars.
Oh, yeah.
The story of Jose Hernandez. And that book had become real popular. And it was popular again this past year with the, you know, Apollo mission.
Oh, yeah.
So my Apollo 11 coloring book, the Trip to Mars coloring book, and The Boy Who Touched the Stars all had, you know, renewed popularity this past year. But this is just another book in a series for them that they just like my style and like what I do. So I try to bring, you know, my best storytelling ability, my best drawing and painting mm-hmm. ability to whatever the subject matter might be.
Dedicated to my grandson, Nico, for always making everyone smile.
And he does, constantly, in addition to other things. He's a great kid. Both of my grandsons are great, Luca and Nico.
So it's just, unbelievable work that you do. And the big thing, Stephen, is the partnering with others. I mean, we've talked, you know, about collaboration and how, you know, it inspires other people.
Well, I have a question more so to kind of the inspiring artists. You know, I think there's so many different avenues someone can take in the art field if it's just, I think, on their own initiative or going to school. I mean, there's no written blueprint, but what's the best way, or I guess what's your best advice for somebody who doesn't know what direction they want to take, but they want to end up in a art job?
Yeah, I always tell my students at Marist, research the field that you want to be into. So if it's gaming, and you want to be in charge of character concepts or environment concepts. Those are jobs. So decide which one you're good at, which one you like to do. I like to draw comic book characters, say, right? You invent your own characters. Well, that's concept art. So if you look into that industry, there's a way of getting into it. You want to be a studio painter. You just want to paint and have your work in galleries. Well, then learn about how to get your work in galleries, because that's a very specific thing. It's a lot of going to openings, getting to know gallerists. So within every little specialty, you got to do your research.
Well, that's another thing, is that the specialty of it, you know, it's not, I'm going to make a broad stroke, mm-hmm. pun intended, you know, generalization, is that when someone wants to get into art, that's just the umbrella. You know, there's book binding, which is a very niche specialty to art, which I had no idea until I met my girlfriend who went to art school and studied in bookbinding, and that amazed me that such a, I guess to the general person that doesn't think about it, it's so important though. I mean, look how your books are made. You know, you need someone to specialize in that. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, we overlook a lot of things that are kind of utilitarian that we use every day. Who thinks that someone designed the fork?
Right.
You know, I mean, and if you go to the store to pick out a fork, you're like, wow, there's all these dozens of different designs of forks. I mean, they all have to work to pick up food and put it in your mouth. But how does it look? How does it feel?
Yeah.
You know, all that kind. So even with the bookbinding, it's a specialty. You know, you look into the industry. I always tell my students this too. The job that you want, someone is doing that job. So why can't that person be you?
Yeah, it's very competitive.
Yeah. It is competitive. A lot of things are. A lot of fields are competitive.
And to your point, I think I might have mentioned this story over the years before. My wife had a friend who was an instructor at the culinary. Mm. And she would also then counsel the students on what they wanted to do. And she was counseling a young woman about what do you like. She's a student at the Culinary Institute of America. What do you right. like? So I like to shop.
Right.
Well, guess what? She wound up leaving there with her culinary background and getting a job with a company that sells cookware and all in that field. And
but it's related to what yes, she loves to do.
Exactly. Able to take the food industry and merge it with a viable career for herself.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, that the broad range of I want to be an artist – you know, it's a difficult life.
Yeah.
You know, you're constantly, you know, looking for work, marketing yourself, doing your best work. I mean, if you're, you know, a gallery artist or a studio artist, making the connections, you know, going to the shows, learning the history. I think the history of anything that you do is so important to learn. I don't care what field you're in. Learn the history of it.
One that has always interested me, and I did one of the remote broadcasts there about 3 years ago over in New Paltz, Viking Packaging.
Okay.
Well, they make packaging.
Right.
no big deal, right? Yeah. Except the fact that, you know, whether it's the cardboard box to keep the apples safe or the packaging for the $30,000 electron microscope, true story, keeping that safe. But then also a few years ago, particularly during COVID, when people were ordering stuff online and they were having the reveal parties, mm-hmm. right? You have to have this packaging so that it has the – you see it on the outside, but when you open it, there's even artistic stuff on the inside for your reveal party. Exactly to your point, how it merges then the physical thing of making the packaging.
Yeah.
To you know, the art that would merge it.
Yeah.
Did you want
to? Well, I had something. Hold on. Yes, I do. Okay. So how does the Hudson Valley influence your art? You might have touched on it before, but not just like your imagination, but I guess the reception of it as well. Because I can't imagine you doing your same artwork and having the same reception in, like, say, Iowa. Yeah, I feel like there's a specialty in the Hudson Valley.
You're right. I mean, people are used to the artwork that they see. And for most of us, we go through, like, you know, a bit of art history training when we're in, you know, school, where you learn about, like, the great artists. You'll learn about Picasso and Monet, you know, all those famous artists. But when you tell a person, like, here, do you know who Andrew Wyeth is? Well, people in Pennsylvania will know who he is. America's Artist. He's called America's Artist, right? Mm-hmm. If you saw one of his paintings, you'd probably know the painting. You may not know the artist's name. But in his region, he's well known.
Right.
And also throughout the world. But there were, you know, there's sections of the country where they're just used to seeing certain things. And Hudson Valley, no different. Went, like, my paintings are not typical beautiful sunset Hudson Valley paintings. I try to capture something that's, you know, might go unseen.
Right.
So I passed those two trees going to Alana for years, you know, and just this one day I see those trees and I'm like, I need to paint those trees. My friend, my fellow artist who had painted with me over the course of 5 years that we did paint at Alana, we would get together and paint on site. They would tell me, which tree you're going to paint today? Because I always noticed this one. There's a beautiful painting that I did of just this gnarled old tree that sat at the base of the house. That just inspired me to paint it. So I think as you go from different regions, different things capture the artist. They put those down. People see it. They're just used to that type of thing.
And my last question here for you before we get to the break. What was your tipping point when you realized, oh, I can do this for a job? I can do this for my living. Was there a tipping point?
Yeah, I knew it was a job because I was into comic books. And I knew comic book artists were working artists.
Okay.
That's what I originally wanted to do, was illustrate comic books. So I went and I met actual comic artists.
And from that point on, you just decided, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I was 13 years old. I knew what I wanted to do.
That's special. Yeah. That's really cool.
So.
It really is. I'll tell you what we'll do. It's closing in already on 8:45. Time flies by here. When we come back, we'll talk about AI's impact on arts and your Marist University students' reaction to it. Back in a minute with Stephen James Petruccio on The Beacon. A48 on Hudson Valley Focus. A little discussion about Taoism there, I think we had as we were coming into the, out of the break right there. We only see beauty because some things are ugly and, yeah, you know, that's how it works.
Imperfection is beauty.
Imperfection is beauty for sure. So the, impact of AI, Stephen James Petruccio, as you were saying, that some of the college graduations recently when they speaker was talking about brought up AI, the graduates booed.
Correct, yeah, because I it's been my experience that young people, my students, they're very wary of AI. They don't know what it's going to do to their jobs. Is it going to take over? Will they still have the ability to be graphic designers?
Yes.
If all you need to do is write a prompt that says, you know, make a logo for me that, you know, it has this image on it doing this and says this, and wrap the letters around the image. So maybe that takes 3 minutes and you've got your product. But keep in mind that product is copyright infringed images that other artists have created.
Right. Right.
Out there in data banks. AI only knows what we feed it.
Right.
So it takes every other artist's or designer's work and says, who can I use today? You know, and that's how it's creating the imagery. So certain jobs that I do, we have to put in specific metadata, which says, you know, who it was created for, when it was created for, the medium it was created in, a description of the work, so that underlying the work, if someone were to find the file, all that information would be in it. We've always been concerned with copyright infringement and people using our images, but it's worse so now because there's no control over it. But AI is kind of – it's just using stuff.
I firmly believe, and in a conversation like this or the conversation I had with Harold and Johnny Ann earlier, I just think the human input is always, always, always going to be required. AI can be a tool.
Yes.
I found what I was looking for.
That's an awesome photograph that Tom has of ice-covered trees that, as a painter, I cannot compete with, so I will not be painting that.
But the day I came up the driveway and around the curve, and I just literally took my breath away to see what nature had painted.
Yeah, I don't compete with what God can do. I'm not that good. So... I'm a good patron,
It took me a couple of minutes. I was listening to what you were saying, but I wanted to scroll back and find that.
The AI stuff, AI is a good tool, so let's think of it as a tool.
Yes.
And learn to use it and learn where to implement it. But yes, let's not lose the human aspect of it.
No.
So even in cases where, all right, the client has a low budget, they don't have the money to pay a designer to sit there and come up with, you know, roughs and sketches and approvals, and they just want it right away, what do we do? Well, you still have that portion of you as the designer, as the artist, who has to decide, you know, is this good enough for that client? You know, is this meeting the needs of that client? So there is that human input into it too. So,
and I just am very, very, very concerned, as I said earlier, the negative narrative about AI, that it's going to take away people's jobs. It will. People will then say, "Well, what's the point of me studying, learning, experiencing what's going on?"
You don't want to be the person who loses the job because you can't do it,
right?
So learn about it,
right?
And if a company is using it and you want to work for that company, well, learn how they're using it, you know, and then learn to use it. And there might be a time where you say, you know, we can do it this way. We don't need, you know, to use AI for this. Why don't we try this?
Yep.
But if you're not in a position to do that, you'll never have that opportunity.
No, not at all. And so in the, 6 or 7 or 8 minutes we have left, let's go north to Olana if we can again.
Sure. I've been visiting Olana since I first started dating my wife, which was over 40 years ago. We were both students at the School of Visual Arts in New York City, and I went up to her mother's house, her grandmother's house at the time in Germantown. And she said, I'm going to take you to this artist's house. Have you ever heard of it, Olana? And I never heard of it before.
Right.
And I went, and does not look or did not look the way it looks today because it's been fully restored, but I was mesmerized by it. And it's just the landscape, the house itself, the architecture. We went back to visit many times. Fast forward, I become president of the Dutchess County Art Association, formerly Barrett House. And we used to do paint outs. And so there are plein air painting events. We get some artists and we go and paint at a place for a weekend. And then those paintings are auctioned off to raise funds for the organization. So when I became president, I said, why don't we go where, you know, Hudson River School began?
Yes.
And we started doing them at Olana. And we were there during the time when they were refurbishing the outside painting over all the stencils and everything, and got a complete tour of the house, places that people don't go to, and saw the intricacies of his, I mean, really wonderful design, you know, mind. Talk about the talent coming out. So he was a great painter. But as a landscape designer, you know, to be able to do it. Church was also a parks commissioner. So, you know, he and one of the founders of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. So he was well versed in, you know, what he wanted out of a landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And then to do that. So this is his 200th anniversary of his birth. So there's a lot of events going on. I encourage people, if you can get up to Olana, you won't believe what you see from there.
Website simply olana.org, O-L-A-N-A, olana.org. And it's you know, with the drone images that they have here, the flyovers of it. Man, you talk about having a perspective of what's up there. I want to go back for 1 second, Stephen, James, Patricio. You mentioned Barrett House.
Mm-hmm.
And I instantly was transported back to being in the Barrett House when they had the photo exhibit of the Warsaw Ghetto.
Okay. Yeah.
Of many, many years ago.
Yeah. I don't recall the exhibit. It could have been either before or after my tenure there. But the Barrett House, and, you know, talk about an exhibit like that. You see imagery.
Yes.
Nothing communicates like a visual image.
No.
We talked about the war artists.
Yes.
Right? So if you see an image of something, you're moved by it. Right? A person can explain something.
What's the what's the war artist? What's the...
So there were combat artists during every war that were, you know, assigned as not only enlisted men, soldiers,
right.
So they carried, you know, their rifle and everything.
And what's the book?
They drew fire.
They drew fire.
They drew fire, yeah. And they literally drawing pictures of...
It is just phenomenal.
...being fired upon, the aftermath of war. So, and why you say, we have films, we have photographs, look at those. But think about your day, and at the end of the day, compiling everything that you saw into one picture. And that's the talent of these artists. More so than just a single photograph of a single event.
Yes.
It was, you know, the whole feeling of that day, of what went on.
I had never been aware of that until you told me the time you were up with me at the Wallace Center doing the broadcast up there, and we talked about it. And when you look at those drawings, those illustrations, they capture an emotion that goes beyond usually what's captured in a photograph.
Yeah.
But that also then reminds me, too, about, you know, we can't, you know, diminish the importance of photography. One of the other exhibits that was up at the FDR was the one that they did a few years ago about the Japanese internment camps that were, you know, the federal government had hired photographers to, you know, document that. So it comes in so many different forms and all very, very important. In the minute or so we have left, back to the students at Marist University.
Great students. Marist is a great place to learn about art. You are on the Hudson River.
Yes.
You see magnificent sunsets. You can't help but be inspired. You can be, you know, into computer animation or gaming, and that inspiration of what – you know, how nature can inspire your artwork, you know, cannot be under, you know, valued. And for them to be right out where art began in this country,
right, you know, right here,
it's right there.
And what a year to be talking about this, yeah, with the 250th anniversary of the founding of the nation. And you know, we've been having the historians from the different counties around, and we'll be also bringing in some of the, you know, local community historians. It's all right here.
It is. You think about it, our country was the East Coast.
Yes.
Right? The Northeast.
Yes.
Centrally. That's where our history began. So all this stuff is here. You travel further out west, and that's new. You know, mm-hmm, all that stuff is new, you know, relative to us. So all that historical stuff is basically here.
But, you know, you when you said about going out west, I was immediately transported to the Garden of the Gods in Colorado, though, the stone sculptured, you know, sculptures carved by nature.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
It's all absolutely beautiful. Stephen James Petruccio, thank you very much. I look forward to many more of these conversations going forward.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Listeners, meet us back here tomorrow morning at 6 on Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon.